The latest story, is your car seat as safe as you think it is? Studies show that your kid will die. You're listening to Dad's Planning, a weekly chronicle of all the weirdest, messiest, grossest, and funniest parts of fatherhood, hosted by two first-time dads. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon.
And Brandon, before we dig in today, how can our listeners find us?
Yeah, so you can check us out on all major social media at Dad's Planning Podcast. We are also available on pretty much anywhere you want to find your podcasts. Definitely check us out on iTunes. If you can, leave us a rating and review. We appreciate it. If you want to get in contact with us, you can reach us at dadsplanningpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and you can also follow us on Facebook at Dad's Planning Podcast, where we do our best to record each episode live on Facebook so you can see our beautiful faces and then you can hear our beautiful voices.
Too much?
No, I'm leaving it in.
Okay, perfect.
And today we are going to be talking all about fears, parenting fears, things that you fear as a mom or a dad. We're going to get into all of it, from the crazy to the funny to the really serious and scary. But before we do, Brandon, what's new with Noah this week?
Well, let's see. Noah has really gotten into expressing himself in some new ways. So one of the things that he has really picked up on is clapping.
Oh, good.
He's very big on clapping, and he's really excited about generating applause.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already getting some nice ego from him, which is great.
Awesome.
And, you know, it really started just when I think my mother-in-law kind of like was clapping for him when he was eating maybe one time, and then he was really excited about that. So Now he just started clapping randomly.
Nice.
So sometimes you'll see him like on the baby monitor when he's supposedly sleeping, and he'll just like open his eyes and clap, clap, clap. Like, no, go back to sleep. You know, like, yeah, you're a great sleeper, but you know, it's not that great of a performance. And I really fueled it because now every time we've been trying to train him to, you know, eat some solid foods. So that's a new thing for us as well. And so now every time he takes a bite, I will clap for him, like very excitedly, like, yay, good job, right in his face. And the best part about it is that if I miss a single bite, he'll look at me and he'll wait.
Uh-huh.
And then if I don't do it, he'll stop and he'll clap.
Oh, wow.
And he'll be like, hey. Where's my applause, buddy?
That's
like,
awesome.
You know, I'm not just doing this for free. Like, this show costs something. You gotta applaud me over here. So I don't know what's taking over him, but it's amazing because he's getting like a little personality.
That is so cool.
Flair about him. I don't know. It's that's the great one, and then I'll throw in one not so great one because, you know, parenting isn't all just fun and games as much as we like to think it is. But he fell off the bed for the first time recently.
Ugh.
So you know, in the mornings you're doing your thing, you're getting ready. You know, we just have our son kind of in our room with us as we're getting dressed and ready for the workday or whatever. And we left him on the bed, and it was just one of those random moments where both of us, my wife and I, were just in the bathroom right adjacent, thinking, oh, he's in the middle of the bed, he's fine. And then all of a sudden you hear the thud.
Ooh.
And everyone, we just look at each other and just like run back into the room, and then we're just like, no, we're terrible parents. How could we do this to our son? It happened.
Was he all right? What happened?
He was fine. I mean, because he did. He fell off the bed onto the floor, but our floors are carpet in our bedroom, so it wasn't as bad as it maybe could have been if it was hardwood.
Mm-hmm.
He cried, you know, for a while, but, you know, in the next, like, 5-10 minutes, he was fine and kind of back at it. So no major issues, but just if you, talking about fears, guys, if you think about your child, like, falling off of surfaces, it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me as a baby, like, plenty of times. I think I, at one point, fell off my dad's shoulders.
Oh,
no. Because he was carrying me, and then I think he would, you know how if you've ever put Noah on your shoulders, you'll hold him by his feet, but then you might realize that he'd be more stable, like if your hands are behind his back or something like that.
Right.
So you'll make the move from one to the other. And when my dad decided to make the move from holding my ankles to like holding my back, that's when I decided to pitch back.
Perfect.
And lean backward. And I went straight to the ground. And it was a similar thing where I think I probably fell on some carpeted surface and, you know, you cry for a while, but
hopefully
you live. This has been happening for thousands of years, and somehow the human race has survived. So I think Noah's going to be okay.
He's got a big head, you know. He's still rocking that like 93rd percentile head size. So, you know, a lot of cushion in there, hopefully.
Well, he came out big. Like, I actually, birth announcement is still on my fridge. And I was looking at it the other day, and I was looking at David's birth announcement too. And I'm like, oh, wow, Noah was a larger baby than David was at birth.
He's long. He's long and big headed. Yeah. So props to my wife. She made it through.
Uh-huh.
You two can can do it. So yeah, what's up with you guys, Jesse?
So David just had his first birthday party this weekend. Of course, I know that you know that because you were there with me.
Absolutely. Great time.
Oh yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we had, you know, at that point, at a year old, we don't live in a part of town where we know a lot of people. So there were a total of 4 babies there. Mm-hmm. You know, not a huge amount, but for babies, I mean, that's kind of a lot of babies when you're having to watch all of them. And of course, there were also, you know, like 20 adults there. And we had a lot of fun. Of course, my wife went all out, you know, baked all the cookies and the desserts and the cake and, you know, the whole nine yards,
all
the decorations.
Notch, all the food was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. When she throws a party, she throws a party.
For real.
It was pretty cool. And, you know, I think he had a good time. He's still not super social with other kids yet. Yeah. I think that happens for different kids at different ages. Like his little cousin who was at the party is, I think, 7 months old now and was just, you know, interacting with kids, getting up all up in their grill. I'm sure he kind of pushed Noah down at one point.
I will say, interacting maybe, but depending on the way you look at it, not throwing any shade, but he was trying to steal my kid's stuff.
Yeah.
He's trying to take his toys, man.
Yeah,
come on
yeah.
Now.
He and David do that all the time. They're like constantly grabbing pacifiers out of each other's mouths. And, you know, yeah. I don't think they learn to share quite this young, unfortunately.
No.
But it'll happen.
But you're just sitting there as a parent and you're just like, hey, back off. This is my kid's passy.
Yeah, totally. But other than that, David has actually also just learned to clap. So he's a little behind the curve compared to Noah there. But, you know, he's picking it. He's starting to pick up some things that maybe other kids pick up a little earlier, but he's just, you know, he's doing his own thing, whatever.
Of course.
So he's learned to do that. He's finally up on his knees when he crawls because he loves being an army crawler. So the fact that now he's up on his knees, that's really exciting for us. And other than that, he also just moved into the next room in daycare. So he's no longer in the infant room. He's now in what they call the pre-toddler room.
Ooh, stepping up.
Yep. So there's new rules. There's new regiments for like when is snack time, when is lunch time. You got to give him his breakfast before he comes in. Mm. You give him like 3 sippy cups, no formula, no breast milk. Like he cannot have that during the day at daycare. So you give him water and milk. And he has adjusted to both of those really, really well. You know, he downed his whole bottle of milk the other day. He's got a full appetite and he's loving it from what I can tell.
Nice.
So yeah, you never really know how a kid's going to react when you change his routine like that or when you change his diet. Yeah. And you know, any number of things could happen. He could have had an allergic reaction to the milk.
Right.
You know, and none of that happened. So, you know, thankfully our fears were not affirmed. And
there you go.
And that is a nice, smooth and not at all forced transition into our topic for the day, parenting fears.
That's right, professionals over here, everybody.
So this is something I think, Brandon, you or maybe even your wife, Austin, had the idea to talk about this because there are so many things that as a parent you're afraid are going to happen. And half of that is just because you think of what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other half of that is because of things that you hear happening, whether it's other parents saying this happened to me or an article in the news, you know, the latest story, is your car seat as safe as you think it is? Studies show that your kid will die.
Of course.
And there's so many reasons to be afraid, and there's so many narratives being pushed to advance fear. And we just wanted to break down some of this stuff. Brandon, I know that you and Austin had a conversation about some things that you're afraid of and that she's afraid of.
Yeah. So we really want to kind of take it from a lens of there are certainly rational fears mm-hmm. of things that can happen, as you mentioned, but hopefully are less likely and just not likely to happen.
Right.
And then there's some fears that you just can't explain why you have that fear, and it doesn't even make perhaps rational sense. But if you're a parent already or if you're about to become a parent, you will certainly learn this. You do not have a lot of rational thoughts as a parent because your brain is just not used to not sleeping. Your processing time is slow.
Yep.
You get a little dumber. You get the baby brain. So you tend to have a lot more of these irrational kinds of things. But if we, I'll start with some of the more possible ones. Let me just pull up here. I got a couple written down. So, you know, even starting from the obvious like, kind of tangent of like sudden infant death syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
SIDS. So just thinking about as a parent, oh, my God, if I'm not constantly watching my child, they could just stop breathing.
Yep.
They could just die right there, and I would never know. They might not even cry out. Like, that's a perfectly legitimate fear. I don't know the numbers on it, but, I mean, it's not a huge mortality rate per se, but it's just something that you live with kind of from day one, and especially on day one, I think. Mm-hmm. So first week, maybe first month, I don't know, when you kind of get into a groove or when you start to lose enough sleep that you stop to think about, you stop thinking about these fears as much. But yep. Certainly for us, that immediate fear as soon as you bring the baby home of like, oh my God, are they breathing?
Mm-hmm.
And especially those first several nights, even if your child is sleeping like right next to your bed or even if you're co-sleeping, just like waking up in a cold sweat of panic and being like, oh my God. And then you look over at the baby and like, is it breathing? Is the chest moving?
Yep.
Okay, yes. Okay, good. Okay, go back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that happened for us a ton. Did you guys experience a lot of that early
on?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I remember in the first few weeks, I would wake up every half hour. literally, every half. Like, I would not get a solid hour of sleep because I would wake up and I would panic and walk over to the bassinet just to look at my kid and make sure he's still breathing.
Right.
And even today, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm turning on the monitor and I'm like, eagle eye looking at that monitor to see, okay, is his chest going up and down? Because sometimes it's really hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, and it always is. You know, one thing that I don't think we think about or talk about much these days is that phenomenon like SIDS is going down over time. And a lot of that has to do with, and this is something that our one of the specialists in the pregnancy phase told us, is that we are now encouraging parents to put babies on their backs when they sleep. So a chart I'm looking at right now that came from Georgetown University kind of charts the rate of SIDS deaths in the United States since the early 80s. And since 1983, it's dropped dramatically. Hmm. And there was actually a steep decline in the early 90s. And right around 2001, it kind of leveled out to where it is now, which is, I mean, from what I'm looking at, it looks like half of what it was in the late 80s. And that's because in the early 90s, that's when they started telling parents, put your kid on their back when they fall asleep. And of course, you know that as the kid gets older, he's going to learn to roll himself over.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he gets to that age, that's when he can kind of wake himself up if he can't breathe, if he's smothering himself. And that's when he can readjust. But before that, you put the kid on their back. And back before then, conventional wisdom was you put the kid on their tummy to sleep so that if they spit up or vomit or something like that in the sleep, that, you know, you're not going to have the asphyxiation choking on the vomit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if maybe we changed just because one is more common than the other. But one way or another, that is less of a risk as it was for our parents, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned the whole like back and front and the flipping, because of course you started them on their back when they're, you know, the newborn, and then eventually say, what, 5-6 months, they start to learn to roll over.
Yeah.
Maybe. Talking about how fears just kind of lead to new fears, even when you think you're done with one, you move on to the other. So you're thinking about, they can roll over, they're in control. I had a terrible fear once he learned to roll over that was then going to cause SIDS to happen, because like I was like, oh, he knows how to roll over, but he doesn't know how to roll back yet.
Uh-huh.
So what happens if he rolls over in the middle of his sleep? Now he's on his stomach, he can't breathe, and I can't hear him now because he's crying into the mattress. Like, that was a big panic moment for me, and like the only way I could feel better about it was just to like ask the doctor, be like, I know this is probably sound really silly, and most questions start that way as parents when you're talking to your doctor.
Yeah,
is like, what if he doesn't like cry out? What if I can't hear him? And they're like, no, he has what you just mentioned, like the panic kind of reflex where he can detect basically that he's not getting the oxygen and either roll it back out, roll back over, or cry out, and he can kind of lift his head up. So, but like, something that would have felt like a calming moment to other people like became a fear of mine.
Yeah, totally. In those early days, there's just, it's like you said, like you're afraid because you don't know things yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're afraid because you're not getting any sleep. And I think now we're at the 1 year mark. We're kind of getting over the hump of a lot of those early parenting fears.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still something that, kind of follows you. It's funny. I saw an email that your wife Austin sent to the Dadsplaining Gmail account, just listing out fears that she has as a mom.
Yep.
And one that I saw resonated with me in a funny way. She says she has this irrational fear of looking at the monitor and seeing a hand, of a stranger,
oh my God,
reach in and take the child. you know, totally rational, but
terrifying,
nightmare. You know,
like horror movie-like-esque. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's something that resonates with me because our monitor has, I guess, sort of a low refresh rate where if you turn it on, it's going to show for a split second an image from like 5 minutes ago before it shows the new image. Hmm. So if we take the kid out of the crib in the morning and bring him into the bedroom with us or down into the play area, and I'll just turn on the monitor because it's still on, for a split second, I'll still see him in the crib, even though he's next to me in the playpen. So I'm like, oh my God, ghost baby. And
my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, monitors are so fun. And I think I have some fears related to the monitor as well because, you know, seeing something on the monitor, sure, but then I always have the fear that I won't have turned the volume on the monitor. And that I won't hear my child crying out. So, of course, you're like, oh, they're doing their job. They're telling you, like, I need help. I need help. But you're just sleeping peacefully through it, and you're blissfully unaware. Like, that's always a big panic for me. And it's happened before. That's the thing that doesn't help with a monitor is, like, again, you're a tired parent. You know, every night, especially in the first, you know, several months, you're constantly playing the monitor game of, you know, it's on. You're making sure that the volume is turned up enough so that you can hear it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just me. Tell me if you guys did this, Jesse. But I would sometimes get into a bad habit of, okay, he's crying. I have to wake up. But, you know, my wife still is going to sleep. I'm going to get up and get him. So I will grab the monitor, turn off the volume so she doesn't have to hear the crying, and I'll go deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to come back to bed after I deal with my son, and then you forget to turn back on the volume.
Yeah, that happens. It's not a problem for us because the bedroom is so close to the kid's bedroom that there's no way we're not going to hear him cry because he has also entered the screaming phase, the screeching phase.
Perfect.
In the past couple of days, honestly, where he wakes up and really we don't even need the volume on with the monitor because we are going to hear him no matter where we are in the house because the kid has got some pipes.
So you are lucky. That is a good benefit. We are
lucky.
Like,
yeah, that's one way of putting
it. Well, the screeching, sure. Yeah. But you'd rather have that, you know, and not have the fear that I have because you know you don't have to have that fear versus I actually have to live with that fear because our son is like two rooms away. There's like the living room and then our bedroom and the added benefit of like we live in kind of an older house and our bedroom used to be like a garage once upon a time.
Uh-huh.
So it has like the double thick extra wide lining or whatever of the room. So it's like has its own sound barrier basically. And I can be looking at the monitor seeing my son screaming and like you can tell the sound is like you can see like the kind of decibels go up to the highest and he's like straining and it like can maybe barely hear him in the bedroom. So yeah, I do live with that fear. So just something to think about. Depending on when your kid moves out of your room, like how close are they to your room? And it's not to say that like I need to convert my living room into a bedroom for him so that he can be closer to me and I can hear him screaming at night. But just, you know, figure out what works for the fear. I think I try to be in a habit of just never turning off the volume anymore.
Yeah.
So that I don't make that mistake ever again.
Mm-hmm. You know, and even beyond, here's one thing that you know, you got to think about. Like, even once they get past the infancy phase, you know, we're so concerned in these first couple of months and first couple of years of just keeping the child alive. And I start to think, well, the light at the end of the tunnel is he's going to be able to walk and, you know, take care of himself, and he'll have a little bit more of a chance of survival at that point.
Yep.
But, of course, the fears are just going to go on because once he learns to walk, you're going to be worried about him running out in traffic or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I put out a call for comments on Facebook before we recorded this session. About, you know, what are you afraid of as a parent? And we have a listener named Karina who has commented. And so she's afraid of kidnapping, child trafficking, you know, the kid not being able to breathe in their sleep, running into traffic, even later on as an adult, having trouble finding a career. Of course, she's raising a child on the autism spectrum. So there's a lot of fears and things that are, you know, exclusive to that we're not going to have as much of a frame of reference on.
Yeah.
But so many of those things are, you know, completely universal. Will your kid get into college? Will they get a good job? Are they going to be social? You know, are they going to have trouble making friends? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that kind of stuff is, it's hard to not think about. You know what I mean? When you get those quiet moments when you're trying to fall asleep and you start thinking about your kid's future. Because I love to think about, like, what is my kid going to do as he gets older?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's he going to be interested in? Of course, that turns into what is he going to have trouble with?
Right.
You know, I don't want him to have you know, problems that I had as a kid and things like that.
Sure, yeah. Do you find yourself kind of projecting your childhood onto your kid yet?
It hasn't happened yet, but I know once he starts to look less like a baby and more like a toddler,
sure,
that that's going to happen. I'll tell you, my mom, who I think is watching right now, had, God bless her, raising me as a baby, because I was a walking bomb of, like, prevent that kid from killing himself, because I would get into everything. Like,
oh,
I would get into Tide. I would get into ant poison. At one point, I stepped in an ant hill, and some ants got in my socks and managed to get with me in bed, and I woke up screaming
because
they were fire ants, and they had just eaten me all over, and I had to go to the emergency room. Like, my mom had poison control on speed dial, basically, for me as a kid.
Oh, my gosh.
And you were
hitting the Tide before you knew it was cool.
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah, I was the original Tide Pod kid.
That's a bad joke.
So, you start to think about that. I'm like, is my kid going to have the same propensity to do those things? And there's no way of knowing, you know, so you're just going to have to deal with that as it comes and do your best to be preventative. But, you know, I do have trouble kind of letting go of some of those things.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. I don't think that we're going to say that you can ever get rid of fears, because it just, if anything, they just kind of evolve and grow and change as your child does. So, like, we have a lot of baby, infant, toddler, young baby fears right now. And you're right, they're just going to morph into, like, young school child fears. Like, is he going to be bullied? Is he going to be a bully?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, it's just going to morph into all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even want to think about it right now, because I love the kind of blissful ignorance of the future fears, because I'm kind of busy with the present day fears.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just too much to do as a parent to, like, worry about the today and the future and the past and your past and their past. So the good news, I don't know, maybe this is not good news, but, like, the sad but true news is, like, there's not enough brain power and time as a parent to think about it all at the same time. So
exactly.
Hopefully you're just kind of working with, like, a set of, like, 5 to 10 rotating fears on a day-to-day basis is kind of how I like to think about it. And, like, it just changes depending on how your day is going and, like, how busy you are, or, like, how good of a mood your child is in.
Right.
and whether you, like, switch it up and all of a sudden you move over into, like, a you know, fear of falling and hitting their head and having irreparable brain damage. You know, that fear maybe doesn't happen every day, but it does when your son falls off the bed like mine did the other day. Or when you think back to, you know, all the times you're holding them over your shoulder and it feels great and they love it, and then you're like, wow, that's really insecure. Like, why don't I have, like, 5 arms? Like, you know, maybe I should just baby wear him anytime that I carry him, just for extra security and support.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really end, and that's kind of the sad part. But I think it's, I don't know. Maybe that's my way of dealing with it, is, like, there's only so much room in my brain for so many fears at any one given time. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I wanted to talk about today was, you know, outside of just the fears of what am I going to do to screw up this kid, there are the more existential fears of what is the world going to throw at this kid, because it's so easy to turn on the news and see things like school shootings and disease and natural disasters and terrorist attacks and just be, like, frozen with fear of what kind of world did I bring my kid into. That's really hard as a parent, you know. These days, it's hard not to look at things and think, wow, things are grim these days, you know. And then you think, well, God, you know, why couldn't he have been born when I was a kid when things weren't so bad? But you're looking at the past through rose-colored glasses and you're not thinking about things, you know. And so one thing I kind of watched in preparation for today's episode was a TED Talk from a guy named Steve Pinker. He's a professor of cognitive psychology at Harvard. And he's been doing this for the past decade or so, kind of giving TED Talks and debates and things like that. And his whole point of view is that when you look at statistics, really the world is safer, less violent, healthier now than at any other point in history. And the reason we see it as more dangerous is because that's just what we see in the news for a million reasons. You know, that's what gets more viewers. And, you know, we're more apt to see the negative in today and see the positive in yesterday, just because that's how our brains work. But he breaks down the statistics. I mean, we are at war less. Your kid is less likely to die in war than we were as kids, and that our parents were and our grandparents were. There's less street violence. Homicide statistically is down. It's hard to see that when you look on the news and see things like murders and shootings and stabbings and gang violence and stuff like that. But statistically, you're less likely to get murdered today than you were 100 years ago. Even since the 90s, child mortality rate is half today of what it was in 1990. Half. 50% fewer kids are dying in the infancy phase than they were when we were children. You know, that is crazy to think about. And that's due to so many things from, you know, new ways to fight disease and new vaccines and safer car seats and safer ways to put your kid to bed. You know, there's less secondhand smoke than there is when we were kids because you can't smoke in public places anymore. You know, there's just so many ways in which, honestly, if you look at it, if you look at the numbers, your kid was born in the best possible time for a kid to be born in the broad scope of human history. And I think that's something that is, it's hard to keep in mind, but I think it's so important to think about if you're a parent that is afraid of things, that's afraid of the world, because you can't shield your kid from the world. You know, you can't be afraid of what could happen. And then for that reason, just keep them in the house, because that's no life. Like, you're going to give that kid no life at all unless you put them out there and put them at risk of certain things. And it's important if you do that to think about, well, yeah, that's dangerous. You know, there are certain things that are going to put my kid in danger. But, the, you know, the things that were dangerous when I was a kid are no longer happening. The things that were dangerous when our grandparents were kids, you know, yeah, your kid could die in a car wreck, but they're not going to be trampled by horse-drawn carriages anymore. they're not going to catch disease working in factories like our great-great-grandparents were. You know, if you're part of a group that historically has been abused, you know, there are still, of course, tons of problems in the world, but we are in the most inclusive, tolerant time in the course of at least American history. You know, we're safer, we're more peaceful, we're healthier, we're living longer. And I think that that is just kind of salve. Am I saying that right? Salve, salve, S-A-L-V-E?
A salve, yeah.
Is that another word that I've been mispronouncing my entire freaking life?
I don't know. What are you trying to say?
You know, like a something to soothe you.
Yeah, a salve.
A salve. Okay, that is a salve for your fears. And I don't know, that's just something that I wanted to put out there. You know, there are there aren't too many episodes that we can kind of put a positive cap on things because parenting, you're never done. You're never mission accomplished, even when your kid has moved out of the house. And there are some things that you just can't resolve. But I think that's one positive way that you can kind of put a cap on a lot of things that we're afraid of as parents.
Beautiful. Well said. And it's nice because, you know, even some of the fears that we've talked about that we have, though we are young in our parenting days, like even just information that's available to you, you can go online, you can research, you can look up what other people, maybe you check out a podcast by two first-time dads explaining, and you use that information to help you out, maybe. Or you just go to any other site, there are plenty of them, about parenting, mom blogs, dad blogs, whatever there are, to help you kind of allay some of those fears. Or we could talk about technology. The fact that we have baby monitors with, you know, visuals where we can feel comfortable about it, and, you know, be able to know. And, you know, if you have certain fears that just like really kind of cripple you, you can even find technology or things to help you do that. Like, if you're worried about the breathing or the body temperature of the child, like there are devices now. They have like little sock that you can put on them that like monitors their heart rate and their breathing, all of that, you know, going on. So it's crazy what we have at our fingertips. We're lucky, you know, our parents didn't have these, I don't know, what do you want to call them, like crutches or like, you know, advancements in technology really to kind of help you through some of these moments. Or even something as simple as for us, you know, when our son was sleeping next to us, we had him in a pack and play, you know, instead of like a bassinet. And it has like a mesh lining around the outside, so if you do wake up in that cold sweat, you can just look over and see him through that. You don't have to get up, walk over to it, pick him up, see if he's breathing. Like, you can just get like a quick visual confirmation. I don't know, something as simple as that like makes a big difference in kind of helping you feel better about it. But you know, you're gonna get through it.
And the last point I wanted to make is I think the reason we're perhaps more afraid as parents than maybe our parents were or that their parents were is because there is just, we are more connected as mm-hmm. a society and we see more. You know, we can log on to the internet and see firsthand scary things happening in other parts yeah. of the world yeah. that our parents and our grandparents had to read in the paper the next day. Fear is more immediate these days, and there's more media, there's more to consume, and there's more to see, and it's all right there at your fingertips. So it all feels a lot closer. Mm-hmm. But really, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you live in a developed nation, which means your kid is way better off than you were, mm-hmm. and way better off than kids in developing nations and undeveloped nations, and he's got a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, use that
yeah.
to be a weapon for you for good. Like, you know, mm-hmm. the effect that you have so much information, it can be scary and overwhelming, and you can hear about more things that might scare you than you used to. All true, but mm-hmm. use that almost to your advantage is how I like to think about it. Like, connect with your family, connect with your friends. You can do it much easier than you mm-hmm. used to. You can see people on social media who are also have kids, and you can connect with them, and you can learn from them, and you can get tips on different things that you may be wondering about, have questions answered. Like,
yeah.
you have
you can,
so much.
You can subscribe to a podcast hosted by two first-time dads.
Yeah, maybe, if you want to, on yeah. iTunes, and leave us a rating and review.
Yeah, and you can share it with other dads.
You can. You know, it could become the coolest podcast out there. But, yeah. I mean, you know, again, take the fear, try to make it work for you. So I don't know. That's what's something that there's too much information. You know, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and it's easy to feel scared and you wish there was less of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there are so many times where we've just taken for granted that we've been able to just, you know, share amongst our friends, like, hey, you know, through a text message or a post on Facebook, like, hey, who's had this problem? And someone's like, oh, I did this. And like, oh, perfect. I'll try that. Like, there's just so many ways that we also benefit from the things that can sometimes scare us.
Totally. So that's all the time we have for today. Brandon, how can our listeners get in touch with us?
Yeah, you can check us out on all your major social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Dadsplaining Podcast. You can also check us out anywhere you get your podcasts. We encourage you to check us out on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know how we're doing. You can also drop us an email at dadsplainingpodcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. So, hey, what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week, we're going to talk about the plague, the sickness, the terrifying time that you think about where you're just constantly sick as soon as usually after your child goes to daycare.
Nice. Okay, so until next time, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon.
And hey, Brandon, why did the restaurant on the moon get a bad review?
Oh, gosh. No idea. Why?
It had no atmosphere.
Of course not.
All right. Thanks for listening.